So this session's on deploying and customising Office 365 groups. Hopefully you've already seen some of the other great sessions we've had at the conference around how to use groups and choosing between things like groups, teams, and even the new Yammer functionality. This session will all be about how you manage those components. We're going to go into some developing on top as well. So I'm the presenter today. My name's Elaine Van Bergen, and I'm from Empired in Melbourne, Australia. So we'll start off with just a little bit about how you govern groups. We'll go through the different ways that you can configure the properties there. I'll talk a little bit about the differences you might see if you've got an Exchange hybrid setup, and then we're going to talk about how to code on top of groups, and finally finish off with a bit of customising on Teams. Now, if you're interested more in a general how to manage Azure AD, there's actually a session by Mark Rhodes in the next time slot that you might be interested in as well. So let's get started. Governance of groups. So the whole premise behind groups basically is that we now have this new world where a lot of people are trying to collaborate together. We're all using all these different ways of talking to each other, and we need a way to kind of facilitate that within the enterprise. You will have seen that there's a whole bunch of different application that's now coming out that sits on top of the Office 365 stack to support that. And basically what we have underneath all of this is Office 365 Groups is purely a membership service. So, you know, I know there's some people that kind of think it's a product, but really it's just the underlying membership service that sits underneath a lot of these client applications that are sitting on top. The main client applications that you will have seen sitting on top of these pieces is Outlook Groups, the piece that sits there within the Outlook client and Outlook Online and provides conversations, files, and shared calendars. We also, coming soon, have Yammer Groups, which was talked about in the Yammer session about how that will integrate with the Office 365 membership service instead of its current separate group identity. And we also have Teams as well, which is the new kid on the block, where we can have those high-velocity conversations. As well as that, we have Planner, which also uses Office 365 Groups, as does Power BI, and finally Staff Hub. So really this groups piece is the underlying piece behind all of those. So that means that we also have to be very careful how we manage this. If you turn off the ability to create Office 365 groups, it's going to affect all of those different services across the stack. So we have to think about very, very carefully how we manage those bits and pieces. So the different ways that we can control things, we have some things in the admin center, and we'll actually go into a live demo in a minute where I'll talk you through some of these bits and pieces. Then we have the Azure AD portal as well, which allows us to configure some of the top level settings. And then we have a whole bunch of PowerShell commands that we can start to use on top as well. There are the Exchange PowerShell commands, which are the older commands, and then I'm going to actually show you a demonstration of these new Azure AD commands, which is the way that we actually control things like group creation now. One of the things that I also wanted to point out is a lot of those user interfaces are actually in preview. So currently, you'll see new settings coming through, you'll see slight changes in behaviour as they get out of that preview phase, as are the Azure AD commands that we're going to look at as well. Finally, when we go through to the different bits and pieces of the things that are created through Office 365, each one of those then has its own ability to have things controlled on top of it as well. So for example, this is a screen from the Office 365 SharePoint side of things, which allows us to control how sites are created. What this setting does is in your tenancy, when you go new SharePoint site, this allows you to change across so that you automatically have a site created with an Office 365 group attached. And that's actually the default behavior that most of you will have in your tenancy at the moment. If you actually wanted to switch back to having a classic site, you can actually change this option and that will just give you a regular team site without the other bits and pieces. And finally, on the SharePoint side of things, we can also create a site quota for that Office 365 group site that's created behind the scenes when it gets provisioned. Finally, there's a whole bunch of things we can do about security and compliance. And now a lot of the other sessions have already done some demonstrations of the reports and the things that we can show there, so I won't delve back into that piece. But you do also have some control from mobile device management as well. So if you're deploying out the applications, like the Groups app, you can have a look at these bits and pieces for how you control the content in there, how you control it getting out to devices as well. Finally, there's a lot more that's coming. So Christoph, in his session earlier, talked a little bit more about these pieces in detail, but these are really exciting features that are coming, so I just wanted to briefly recover them. We start to get deletion recovery. Currently, with Office 365 groups, when you hit that delete button, you do get the typical "Are you sure?" warning, but then it will really be deleted from your tenancy. Soon that's going to actually become a soft delete to allow us to be able to restore that. And that will actually then go hand in hand with the expiring groups features. As we're starting to get a lot of these groups in the tenancy, we often find that, you know, people create them and they're very excited about them, and then a few months later, they're no longer using that group. That expiring group feature will allow an email to be sent to the owner, and they will then have to confirm whether the group's in use, and then it can actually delete that group using that soft delete back into the tenancy. We also then start to get more control over some naming policies, as well as banned words and profanity checking, so that we can automatically control the group creation. Now I'll actually show you how to create it with scripts, so then you obviously have full control of that over the top. So let's jump into our first demo of some code. All right, so we're going to start with the basics, just where you find all these settings that we mentioned. So we're in the admin center here. And if you go over to settings, services and add-ins, you'll see that you have a lot of settings down here. So we're going to first look at the group settings. And these are very, very basic settings. So at this level, all we've got is the ability to let group members outside the organization access content, turn this off at a global level, and also turn off whether group owners can add people outside the organization to groups. That's the main setting that we actually get there. Now, previously, most of the management of groups past that level was in the old Azure AD portal, which is actually this portal up here. But now it's a lot more, it's actually been pushed in preview over to the new portal, so we'll actually have a look at that particular one. It's got a lot more settings as it loads up. So this is just under the, so basically to get here, we're just going down to the blade style menu, picking Azure Active Directory. You'll actually then get a whole bunch of information about your Azure AD. And I should mention, if you've got an Office 365 tenancy and you've never used the Azure AD pieces before, you might be asked to sign up the first time just as you go through. So don't be alarmed if you kind of see that sign up screen. It is already configured behind the scenes, but I just ask you in case you want to use the rest of Azure. Over here, we've clicked on Users and Groups, and I now have the capability to list all the groups out. And you can see that it's giving me a mix of Office 365 groups in with my security groups. So I can see both sorts of groups and manage them all here in one nice interface. Then I have my group settings, which I can change. And they are self-service group management enabled, whether everyone can manage security groups. So these top ones are just talking about normal security groups in your directory. And the bottom section here is where we are looking at the Office 365 based groups. So those bottom four checkboxes that you can slide across. Now, one of the things that I have noticed being in preview, applying these settings sometimes can take quite a little bit of time to actually reflect back on your tenancy. And on occasion, you will find it is a little bit hit and miss at the current time as to whether it flows through to things like Planner and the other features of the stack. So while these settings are here, I definitely recommend instead that you look at actually the PowerShell version that I'm going to show you, because that seems to be a lot more reliable in this preview stage. The other things that we can also do in the same Office 365 Admin Center is we can just look at our groups there. So when I go to Groups under the main heading, Groups is listed. I can then filter it down and only see my Office 365 groups, and I can create groups through here as well so that I don't need to script them up if I don't want to. At the moment, there is also a basic naming policy that you can apply, which is basically a prefix or a suffix that you can apply to the Office 365 group name. That's actually currently managed through the Exchange Admin Center, but will shortly be moving over to Azure AD. But for this period of time, you would go Admin, Exchange Admin Center, and then going down to this group setting here, off these dots, you will then see Configure Group Naming Policy. And as this loads up, you'll then see the current policies that you can set. So you might set an attribute policy, and you can also see a blocked word list here as well. So I've prevented anyone from creating a group called SharePoint Team Sites with this particular configuration. And that's quite easy to use, and it will get much more featured as it goes through into the new portal. All right, while we're in this browser, I just thought we'd click a little bit into Teams, which is the newest item that's been included there. So under that same Services and Add-ins menu that you saw before, you now have the option for Microsoft Teams. Here you can turn off or on Teams for your whole tenancy. One thing to notice is when you turn it on, it doesn't actually give you an icon in the app launcher, so you may not actually realise that it's been turned on. You sort of have to navigate through it by the Teams URL at the moment while it's in the preview phase. And then we have a whole bunch of different options that we can enable and disable in terms of how the Teams works. A couple of the important things for the demos that we're seeing later when I talk about customizing, if you want to be able to actually do your own development of things, you'll have to enable custom tabs if you want to do that piece, and sideloading of bots for the development phase. Now, you may not want sideloading turned on in production, but for what we're doing, that's how we've got it. Also, if you've seen some of the features around the fun kind of animations and those pieces, this is where you turn that on or off. And you can also set a content rating for a lot of that as well. So you have a little bit of control over those pieces. Finally, once you've enabled Teams, then there is one further step. So if we actually pick one of our users, by default, you will see that most of them are actually already licensed, but it is actually a licensing option to access Office 365 Teams, Microsoft Teams. So what that enables you to do is if you disable the license for Teams for the majority of your users and you just license a few of those users with that Teams feature, that's how you can run a pilot in your organization without granting everyone access to that particular piece. So right here, as it loads up, we'll see under product licenses, if we've assigned them just the generic E3, E5 license, they will have access to all the different pieces beneath it, but you can actually expand that out. And then you can turn off the particular team SKU. Now, of course, the way I did it there is great for one or two users. If you've got a large directory, you're going to want to script that. And there was actually a session earlier on in the conference by Mark Rhodes and Brian Farnhill on scripting Azure AD, and they actually ran through how to automate that scripting of licensing. So now let's switch over and work out how we create groups. So this is a little script that I used to do this, and I'll show you a blog that you can refer to for some more information on it in a minute. Firstly, the first thing that you'll need to do is download the Azure AD preview commandlets. And when you actually load them up, you will notice that there is both a preview version and a generally available version. The groups commands are still in this preview version here, so you actually want the preview one, not the GA, otherwise you won't be able to do these bits and pieces. Once we've got them downloaded, installed, which I've already done, then the first piece that we do is we just connect through to the Office 365 tenancy with an admin account. And then we can start looking at some of the different settings. I'm just going to expand that up so it's a little bit easier to see. So hopefully now that we're connected, one of the first things that we should be able to see is these are all the different sorts of group settings that we can connect through to. The one that we actually want to play with is the settings for Office 365 groups, which is this group.unified settings template. So I'm just going to grab that and actually expand out to show you the different properties that we could set. So you can see here, this is where we can set a prefix suffix naming requirement. So we can actually do a little bit of that naming policy items here. We can allow guests to be owners. We can define a guest usage URL and whether group creation is allowed, as well as provide a classification list that we can apply to groups. And we'll actually go through and do a bunch of these bits and pieces. So one of the things that I want to do in this example is I want to turn off the ability for most people to create Office 365 groups, but I want to ensure that we still have a group of people that can create these artifacts, because it's really important in a large business that you're not, you know, turning these features off and pushing people through to a different third-party service because they're going to put their credit card in and try to use something else. So we want to make sure there's people that can actually create groups, but we're going to try to restrict it a little bit from the whole of the business. So I've actually created an Azure AD group earlier called Office 365 Group Creators. And that is actually the group that has members in it that we're actually going to apply and allow to create the groups. So the first step that I need to do is just get the settings template, and then I create a settings object, which we can see here. Once that settings object is created, then we just go through and we apply the different bits and pieces that we actually want to. So if you wanted to turn off groups for everybody and not worry about the particular group that can create them, I would just need to apply this enable group creation setting equals false. You can see we're also going to apply group creation policy, so we're going to allow a group. I'm going to set a usage guidelines URL, and I'll show you where that turns up. And then I've got my classification list that we're actually going to apply as well. So once we load all of those items into the settings object, we then apply the settings object, and that will actually push it through. Now, because of the asynchronous nature of all these services, there is a slight delay before you will see this apply in all different places. It's usually pretty quick, less than if you go and grab a coffee and you'll see it reflected through, but it's not always instantaneous, particularly if you have cached browsers. Now, that's all and well and good if you've set that the first time, you know, and obviously we've got it configured now. Often you might come back later, though, and realise that you want to change those particular settings. So to change the settings, all we do is we can just retrieve the settings, and I've just, this time, instead of, you know, listing out the GUID, I've just searched for the display name of group.unified and piped that in to get the settings. And then I can actually ask it to reflect out those settings that we just set. So that's how, particularly if you're a consultant going in to look at other people's Office 365 tenancies and you want to see what they've actually configured, just those two commands there will actually get that out for you. We can then also use that settings object to then update items. So in this case, rather than telling people just to bing for things for the usage guidelines, I actually set it to a document that I've actually loaded into the tenancy, and then we just need to actually save those settings back, and that will push it through. And just to prove that it is actually set, we will then write that back out. So you can just see it reflected that item, and it's just changed it straight away for us. We also do, if you then decide that you really want to delete that item, you can actually use the settings ID and just run the remove item, and that will actually totally clear out those settings for you. If you try to run the add command and settings are already set, you will actually see that it throws an error straight away, and it'll actually not let you modify it. So that's when we have to use this modify method up here. As I mentioned earlier, there's actually a really good blog post that walks through a lot of these. Victor Vaillant's actually gone through in detail, talked through each of these commands, and gives some other examples in there as well. So that's definitely a good one to refer to if you want a bit more detail on how each of those commands currently work. He does note a few of the typos that's actually in the TechNet documentation that's being fixed at the moment, so I'd definitely refer to that one as the first point of call while it's in the preview phase. One of the other really common things that I just wanted to show as well is, so we've turned off Office 365 group creation, and that means that users won't see that plus dialog in Outlook to create groups or any of the other different places. Administrators can still create it through the administration interface, but in a big organization, you're going to want to make sure you automate that group creation just to be able to do that efficiently. Also, so that you can actually provide a consistent way of creating these groups. So I'm actually going to do some commands now to create a new Office 365 group. And I'm actually using the Office 365 PMP provisioning libraries, the PowerShell libraries, to do this. There's actually not really any support at the current time in the current SharePoint Online libraries, so these are definitely the best libraries to use for this particular piece. They only release the commands that we'll be using in their November release. So if you want more information on those, just go to dev.office.com patterns and practices. And I recommend starting with this Office Dev PMP webcast that'll walk you through the basics of how to get these commandlets that I'm going to use installed. And it'll talk you through all the different options. There's a lot of different commands in this particular library. But we're just going to run a couple of the more basic ones. So the first one that we need to do is we're going to have to connect. Just make sure we pick the right one. Okay, and this is actually connecting through to the graph section of the API to be able to do these different pieces. So that's actually gone through and connected. And as you can see, we've asked to read and write, and we've asked to read as well. If you weren't creating groups, you were just looking at things, you might just need that read capability. But we actually want to create one here. So I've got that command prepared where I'm actually setting a bunch of different options, and we'll just have that running in the background. So what you can see is I've called a single command, new-PMP unified group, and then passed in a bunch of parameters to control the bits and pieces that I want here. In this case, I've put a display name, description, the nickname, which is actually going to be the URL of the site, and I've also put in the members that I want, which is a list of different people. I can do owners, I can make it whether it's private or not, as you can see here. And there are a bunch of other options as well, but these are just the basic ones. So if the demo gods are being nice to us today, hopefully when we go back into our Office 365 tenancy, we should have a group provisioned. And this is just a out-of-the-box group. So it's not only done the membership service, but it's also pushed through and created a SharePoint site and all the other pieces behind the scenes. Now, one of the most common things that people then ask is, how do I do things to that site after it's provisioned? So we'll talk through a little bit of those. Because we're using the PMP commandlets, there are commands in there that allows us to set the quota. So you can use the one I showed on site on the previous command with the out-of-the-box SPO commands, or given we're already in PMP, we'll use this particular one here. So this will actually set a quota on that site for us. Whoops, I forgot to connect. My apologies. So one of the things that we need to do is, because we've actually now shifting from the graph context over to just SharePoint Online, we actually have to pass through credentials to that particular service. Now, obviously, you could store these credentials, but in this case, I'm just, you know, prompting for demo purposes. So hopefully now we should be able to set. And so what I've done in order to be able to set properties on that site is I've grabbed the group I've created. I'm actually using the site URL of that as the identity to pass in for all the commands that are actually going to run here. So there we go. We've set We've set a quota. Now, there are a few things we can't do, though. This is not a fully featured SharePoint team site. It's actually a little bit more like a OneDrive site. We only get a limited number of commands. So we can actually set things like this, storage quota and warning URL, but we can't change all the different properties because there's a lot of things that groups relies on, particularly as we get through those groups apps. So you'll see in this example, if I start to try to muck around with the title of the site, we should get a nice, nasty error coming back, and that will actually tell you down the bottom the valid parameters that we can actually run. But other than those top-level properties, we do have control over various items. So one of the requests that I know a few people are asking about earlier in the session was how would we then go through and provision some folders? So if we go through, and hopefully we'll be able to put few folders in there. Let's just add a couple. And I'll just make sure. Just make sure it's 22. Okay. So as you'll notice, is what groups does, if you run it with the same alias, it'll just append numbers to your actual alias that you put in there. So I've run this demo a lot of different times, but you can see I've gone into group 22 here, and there's my shared document library with two different folders provisioned into it. So if you do have a particular structure you want to put in there, that's one of the ways you could do it. Now, I know a few people have also been asking about how we do really structured metadata and a lot of the other different things that we can add. While you do have some control over that, think very carefully about applying large amounts of configuration to these kind of sites. The users are actually going to be accessing through a myriad of different apps, and primarily they're going to drag and drop a lot of content into here. They're not going to see that pop-up property and want to enter metadata and all those kind of things. It's all about rapid collaboration. So there's definitely ways you can apply classification behind the scenes, but ideally think about trying to do that without end-user impact. Folders is a good way to kind of apply some of those defaults. You can also go through to the homepage and add some items there if you needed to as well. All right, so we've done our folders, we've put them in, and I think it's about time we now switch back to the slides. All right, so we've seen how you control who can create groups. You can choose to turn that setting on or off, and you can actually have a limited number of people by applying an Azure AD group that are actually allowed to create that group piece. Also, you've seen a nice easy way to be able to script up creation of groups there that gives you that capability. There are actually some limits that you need to be aware of, and these are expanding all the time, so definitely check the TechNet articles on these. But you can currently only have a limited number of owners per group, so 10. A user who's not an administrator can only create about 250 groups, and there are some limits on the number of members and the default file storage that you get unless you set a smaller quota than that. Also, as Yammer comes through, Yammer, the configuration to allow Yammer to utilize Office 365 groups will actually be pushed through in a number of waves. In the session this morning by Angus Florence, he actually talked through what the additional waves will be after wave one. But these are the requirements for wave one to be able to immediately take advantage of Yammer using Office 365 groups. So the first thing is a one-to-one network configuration. If you've got multiple Yammer networks that you're clicking up, you're trying to tie to your Office 365 identities, that actually won't work in the initial release. It's really just one main Yammer network bound to your Office 365 tenancy. You also have to have gone into Yammer and selected the enforce Office 365 identity setting. That ensures that users are actually logging in with their Office 365 identity rather than the separate Yammer identity store. And then once that's configured and these features roll out, you will actually start to see the Office 365 resources appear per group when they're created in Yammer. Remembering though, if we turn off that setting I showed you before about being able to create groups, people aren't going to be able to create these Yammer groups either, and it'll revert back to the older style Yammer groups for creation. Also, Yammer, once this is set up, will still allow the email you to email into that email address, and it still appears in the GAL. So I'm going to switch gears a little bit now and talk about what happens with Exchange Hybrid configuration. Now, of course, it would be great if we could all move everything to the cloud, but for some legacy reasons, many people want to remain in Exchange Hybrid configuration, and there are quite a few little tricks that you kind of can get hung up on with groups with that particular setup. So one of the first things you need is the requirements for full functionality. To be able to do write back to on-premises, so when you create an Office 365 group in the cloud, you want it to push back into your address list in on-prem, you actually need Azure AD Premium to be able to enable that feature via Azure AD Connect. You also need the CU1 for Exchange 2016 or the CU11 of Exchange 2013. However, there's a nice little star on that that says the latest CU is required for hybrid. So actually recommending that once you set that hybrid configuration up, you're always keeping your patch level up to date to ensure that any changes in Office 365 that needs an extra CU will be flowing down to your on-premises environment. So just be aware that you want to be looking at updating your Exchange regularly if you're going to be in a hybrid configuration. The hybrid user experience is a little bit different for users with on-premises mailboxes. So cloud users will have full integrated groups user experience. They'll see groups in the left-hand pane, but for on-premises mailbox users, they actually won't see the groups listing. They will be able to see it in the global address list and send an email to that group, which goes into the conversations piece, and they can click off to group files, notebooks, and all those kind of things. One of the caveats, which you can see noted on this slide, is for them to access some of those features, they need to be licensed in Office 365 for SharePoint Online. So, you need to make sure, even though they're not using the Exchange piece, you have actually licensed them for those bits and pieces. Also, there's client compatibility issues that you may hit, and I'm talking about the Outlook client here as well, that you'll see different behaviour if you're installed with the latest version of Outlook from Office 365 that updates regularly versus if you've installed an older MSI of Office 2016, which includes Outlook. A lot of the earlier releases of Office 2016 didn't have full groups capability, so you want to make sure you update that to one of the latest versions if you're looking at doing this groups connectivity. Ideally, grab the click to run install from Office 365. There's also a number of known issues that you can hit. There's a TechNet article on all of these that walks through how to fix them. Generally, they're pretty easy little fixes, but obviously often we're talking about Exchange configuration here, which is a fairly critical business setup, so you want to be a bit careful and ideally get these set up first the right way. So sometimes you will see groups don't appear for mailboxes when they've just been moved to Office 365. And you might need to remove the mailbox and add that back to get it set up. New users don't appear in on-premises. Often you might have to manually run the command, run update recipient, to be able to push that down if you've actually got a setting that has a bit of an issue. Equally, groups don't receive messages from on-premises, so if you've got issues with your authoritative domain setup, that's where you'll see a lot of the flow get mixed up and trying to push those messages back. And if you don't see, for those online mailbox users, if they don't see groups in the drop-down pane, that's generally related to an auto-discover issue with your actually Exchange hybrid setup. So just double-check all those steps for each one of those. And then there are a number of known issues, finally, that don't have a workaround at this current point in time. So these are really just limitations of the current configuration. where you can't actually send to the secondary SMTP address, among another bunch of mail flow issues. So just be aware of these pieces. As I said in the earlier slide, the people that are on-premises mailboxes, they will get some capability, but they're certainly not a fully featured user of Office 365 groups when it comes to that conversations piece. Ideally, if they're going to be using groups a lot, that's a really good reason to try to migrate their mailbox across to the cloud. All right, let's switch tracks again and talk about how we code with groups a little bit. So groups is primarily interacted with through the Graph APIs. And there was a session actually before this on the authentication piece for how you connect through the Graph API from a number of different methods. So we won't talk a lot about the authentication side of things, but we'll talk more about just the basics of the API. So really, the Graph API now is an all-encompassing API that provides access to a lot of the features of Office 365. It's really centered around users and objects, and we're going to actually look at the particular group object where we can actually then pull out a number of different things such as conversations, files, notes, and all the different pieces. There is some differences between the production API and the beta API, so depending on what you're doing, you might have to switch across to the beta API for certain activities. This is just a brief graph of how it shows through. Now, one of the great things is if you are doing activities with these the Graph APIs, there's a lot of Microsoft samples on this and SDKs for almost every sort of different way you might be connecting through. This is how we navigate the API. It's pretty basic stuff. We'll actually have a look at the Graph Explorer, which is actually listed down the bottom there, and I'll actually show you how we use that when we get up to the next demo to actually explore how it works before we even go about writing any code. There's also another item that we can do, and basically with both groups and teams, we have the ability to add things called connectors. And connectors are for pushing external data into our Office 365 groups. If you saw some of the sessions earlier around groups, you would have seen some examples where Twitter information was being pushed into an Office 365 group using the group connector. What we'll actually talk about is how you might want to add your own connector. There are a heap of already built connectors out there, over 100 last I looked in the actual service, and that's very rapidly gone up from just under 50 on launch to already over 100. So we are seeing a lot being added into that ecosystem. But basically how it works is we have the Office 365 group. It pushes a GET command to connect to Office 365, grabs your app, and then posts information back into the group. Now, on this particular slide, the thing that the connector is calling is a provider-hosted app. For the SharePoint folk in the room, I don't mean a SharePoint provider-hosted app. I just mean any web app that's hosted somewhere other than within Office 365. So it could be any technology, nothing specific. That's very, very basic kind of setup. And then it can then push back that information, have it reflected into the group. So we're going to show a demo in a second and actually walk through this. So there's a way to do a simplified connector, and this is a really good way to kind of prove the concept and work out, you know, what the use might be. We're actually going to use a predefined webhook connector. We'll register it. And then I'm just going to use Fiddler to basically show you how to push a command into there. As you'll see, I'm just doing a basic HTTP post. But, you know, obviously you could do that within your own applications. So let's jump in and have a look at it. All right, so we'll go back to the group we just created. I actually, while that's loading, so this is one of the things that actually, sorry, I should have shown before. So when we sent that group usage guidelines, this is where it appears. So as people are actually creating a group, or in this case, modifying the group properties, you can actually then click on that group usage guidelines setting right there. You can also see that my classification list is actually appearing down here. And adding these classifications then allows us to apply additional configuration down there, or even just work out, you know, how we're going to program against that site. So that's where those settings actually push through to. We'll see if this one loads a little bit quicker. All right, so we're going to get our Office 365 group loading up. We'll just find a new group. Hopefully going to be fine. And you'll see we have this connectors icon down here. When this loads up, it's actually going to give us a list of all the existing connectors that we can apply. And, you know, there is really an endless list down there. But we're just going to use the incoming webhooks connector, which I will select. And we'll just hit add on that. We can change the image, and then we create the webhook connector. We can do exactly the same thing over here in Teams as well. So we can have connectors push through for each of our channels. They actually live over here under connectors. You'll see the same webhook, which I can pick. Equally, I can change the image and I can hit create on that one as well. And then with each of these webhooks, we actually then get a URL back that we use to actually call it. So we'll start with this one. We'll just grab the URL and hit done. And you will see that it will have pushed a message into the group saying I've configured a connector. Equally, if you come back in here, you'll see that it tells me I've got one connector configured. I can expand it and I can manage it as well if I happen to forget the properties or need to change the properties of it. So we'll paste, whoops. What did I do? Oh, no. What's going on? It's very strange. All right, so all I've done here is I've loaded up Fiddler, and I just have Fiddler set so that I'm not actually capturing traffic at the moment. I'm actually just using the composer piece of it. And if we'll just zoom in a little bit here, you can see I've set it to post, and I've actually put in the URL of our webhook. I've set the content type to actually be application/JSON, and then I've composed my message down here in the request body. Now, these items aren't all mandatory. I've just combined a bunch of things into a single demo to make this a little bit easier. But you can see I've got a title icon there. I have text. I have a theme action, a theme color, and I also have a potential action that I put in there as well, where I've asked it to be a view link, and I've actually set the target of that particular link. So there's full documentation on the Microsoft site about this, and we're actually going to execute it. Fingers crossed. We're looking for a 200, so that's a good sign. And at the same time, while we're waiting for that to push through, we will try exactly the same thing with Teams. 200. Okay. So there we see we have our webhook that's just pushed a little card through into our team straight away. It says hello from Ignite, gives us a hyperlink that we can then click through and perform an action to. And back in our other browser, which one was I in? There. So you see this has now said new activity as well, and there's our incoming webhook. This colour down the side is the colour that I actually set in that particular icon. Teams doesn't currently show the colour option. It is only in this Outlook Groups kind of interface. When you look at the documentation, you will see there's some differences in what cards and messages the different services support. So depending on what you're hooking that webhook up to, you need to kind of change that around. But as you can see, that's a pretty basic way to be able to push some information into our Office 365 interface there, so nice and easy. All right, we'll switch back to the slides. So that was demoing a very simple connector. As you can see, I didn't really need to write any code. I just hooked up a webhook, and then I've actually used Fiddler to push in a message. Obviously, Fiddler is just representing your line of business application there, but pretty easy way to get debugged and get started. What you will have noticed is when I configured that, I went to a particular channel or a particular Office 365 group, and I configured it up myself. That works if you're only doing a very simple application, but if you want to deploy something to a lot of different channels or a lot of different groups, you don't want people to be having to click those settings over and over again. There's no API at the current time to be able to do that either. So in that particular case, you're probably going to want to build your own connector that incorporates a lot of the configuration, puts it into that connector drop-down list, and makes that configuration experience a lot easier. This involves a few steps. So if you go to Connectors Developer Dashboard, this will actually walk you through all these steps in detail and actually provide you with an example of how to do this with full code. Basically, you register your connector. That's really, you know, giving it a home page. You've got to make sure that you have something set up that, can do this. And then it will give you a particular HTML sample come back that you actually have to use with a Connect to Office 365 button to make sure it can wire everything up when users select that particular option. And there is actually a sandbox that you can actually play in as well. So those cards that you saw that I was sending backwards and forwards to the groups, that's where you can actually play with some of that syntax and get your syntax right for the particular cards in the channels. And then finally, once you've got that developed, I just kind of sideloaded mine, but you can actually publish it through to the store to get it into the connectors catalog if that's something you want to do if you're a particular vendor. The Connect to Office 365 button, so that's just asking authorization for the connector to communicate with the target Office 365 group, and really does a very basic redirect, just a couple of properties you need to implement there, which is nice and simple. And then we get the redirect URL, which you have to implement yourself, store the webhook URL, make sure obviously it's a safe and reliable place. I can't emphasize that enough, that it needs to be stored very carefully, because basically anything that can, you know, kind of hit that URL will be able to start posting things in. And of course, very common, you need to handle some error codes. The most commonly seen error codes you'll see is access denied and an invalid request. So you need to work out what to return if you do get a request that's malformed. Posting cards, as you saw from Fiddler, really simple. HTTP post just pushes the body of the request into the body of that message, and there's a whole reference schema for how we put that together. The responses that we get, so we were very lucky in the demo, we got a 200 first time. If you mess up the syntax, you'll actually typically see a bad request. If you put the wrong URL for the webhook in there, you'll get your 404 not found. If you put too much in there, you're actually going to get payload too large. And there is actually throttling that they actually perform on this. So if you looped around and tried to send it 1,000 requests at a time, you'd expect to see a 429 coming back. Now, finally, we'll talk about our last topic, how we customize teams. There are a few things we can do to Teams, and it is still in preview, so you know there'll be more coming likely as we go towards the final release and after final release. One of the first things we can do is create tabs. So tabs are actually added at the channel level, and this is how we can connect through to different line of business applications. The ones that you'll already see in there are things like Power BI, connecting up SharePoint sites. And it's a really simple process to create these. You can basically turn any web app into a tab if you want to. The only things to be careful with, and it does talk through this in a bunch of the examples, is you want to make sure it renders in a way when it's shown as a tab to the end user that is understandable in the Teams app. So we'll show that. Pretty much all we have to do then to publish it through is create a package with a manifest in it and with the configuration screens. We also have bots. So bots are the exciting thing, and we can actually push these through and register it with the bot framework and use Teams as a channel. You actually can't publish your bot fully at the moment. It has to be sideloaded. So remember that setting back at the first demo where I said sideloading bots in Teams? That'll be turned off in your tenancy by default. Turn that on, and then you can actually start paying with bots in your actual Teams application. And then with those, the bots and the connectors, we can actually then push the cards through. And you actually have some more fully featured cards when we get into the Teams area, where we can start doing carousel cards, list cards, thumbnail cards, as well as the very basic things that I've already shown. So we then get some support for different messages depending on what we're doing. So our bots can do things like rich text. They can also do pictures and the full cards. And, you know, there are some limits, though, on things like the pictures. You'll notice there that it's given you a megabyte limit. It can't push through massive images when we're using them within this particular interface. With the text format, equally, you have a few different formats you can use. I just use some very plain text for mine, but you can actually push through more detailed examples if we want to. So let's jump into the last demo. So one of the things that I've already set up in here is I actually went through and pre-configured a bot. And if anyone saw my portal session earlier in the week, I actually talked through how this is configured. But basically, it's just a Q&A maker bot. So with a Q&A maker, you upload a bunch of text that you wanted to talk back to. I've just published my bot then into Azure. And with my bot service that's published there, you'll see I then have a number of different channels that I can select. By default, it'll typically just have your basic Skype channel, but you just go in and you turn the Teams channel on, and then it gives you the configuration screen for that here. So I can actually enable it within Teams, and once you're done configuring that, it'll actually then close that screen for you. The last step is the one that's a little bit tricky. So once you've configured it and said, hey, it can use Teams as a channel, then we need to actually add the bot into Teams to be able to talk through it. And there's actually a nice little article on on MSDN about how to do this. You'll notice what it states is that you basically need to get the app ID of the particular bot that you've just created. You use the app ID and you just put it in like you're having a chat with the user. So basically the first time before this bot was added, I just went to compose a new message, put the ID in, and then from that point in time you can see it's actually looking like a normal user icon here, and it can actually have the conversation back and forward, and I should be able to ask it some questions and actually respond back. So there is a little bit of a delay typically on when it talks back to us, but there you go. We're just having a nice little conversation backwards and forwards. Like I said, this is a very basic bot where I've just, you know, preloaded a bunch of questions, and it's just using some of the cognitive services to be able to do the different options for those. But you can have quite advanced functionality in there. One thing I will note, however, that during this preview phase, while I can access bots here in the chat interface, when I go into my Teams and I try to chat to a bot backwards and forwards within a channel, it's actually erroring at the current period of time. You'll always get back, I did not understand your message, because it's adding a whole bunch of extra things to the schema based on the channel that it's in and the conversation that's happening backwards and forwards, that currently Q&A Maker doesn't understand that format. If you coded up your own bot, you could actually get it to work in this particular piece, but that would be a much more advanced example. So the other thing that I just wanted to quickly show is how we add a tab. So here I'm in Teams, and I'm under Channels, and you can see that we have the Add a Tab button down here with the out-of-the-box tabs that we can add. If you haven't seen it recently, Stream has just started to appear in here for most users, along with the other particular ones. So if I want to add my own custom tab, what I need to do is I need to select the team. I need to go to View Team, and then you see I have this developer preview option here. From the developer preview, I can actually upload the manifest for my tab, and this will actually upload it into this particular interface. And then when I go back into here, you'll see I now have an additional icon appearing. I can pick my tab, and every time this is actually then added to a channel, you will then get this flow where firstly it'll ask you to accept the terms and conditions and click through to several documents. So I'll accept that. This is loading the configuration screen, which you can have any settings that you need to in. In this particular case, it's a map example, so we're asking it whether Bing or Google Maps. We then save this, and I've allowed it to post to the channel. And then finally, it will ask me to accept that I really want to add this into there. Oh, we've got in a bit of a loop. All right, and from that point in time, and you see I managed to add two, but you'll see then it appears as a tab here, and much like the other tabs, might be a bit confused because we've got... I think we're just getting a bit of very slow loading of it. Anyway, your web application will actually then render within that particular tab interface. And you can see that you can actually go in and change the settings and remove it as well. It's a little bit picky if you try to use the mouse to get to that remove button. It seems to mouse off a little bit. But let's look at the particular format for creating one of these tabs. Now, I'm actually using a specific sample that I've actually grabbed from Office Dev. This is the Microsoft Teams sample Get Started. Really good sample just to have a look at all these bits and pieces. You can download it from here. And the way this actually works is this will give you a copy of the code to look at, and you can actually change it around if you want to. But it's also deployed onto the web as well. So in the manifest, what you'll notice is this is currently pointing to a production URL, teams.getstarted, which is actually where this is hosted online. So you can actually get used to and deploy this without even having to host your own web app at the current point in time. This is our manifest. So all the manifest has is a very, very simple schema. You can see the name, the URL for it, the privacy and usage URLs that you saw pop up when we did that accept terms. A little description about it, full description, two different icons that have to be very specific sizes because of where they're appearing. So that square icon you saw as appear as a tab, the colour that I want behind that icon, they have to actually be transparent and you push your colour through here, and the configuration URL that's going to load when I first do that configuration, plus any other options that we actually want to put through. What that then looks like is you've got these are my images. Like I mentioned, I've got the manifest, and you just zip them up. Those three items go into this file together. That's all that's in there to publish a tab, so you don't need to publish a web app or anything like that. As I mentioned, this sample then also has those full config page and also the removal dialog as well. So this is your basic code. As you'll see, it includes some JavaScript provided by Microsoft Teams to be able to perform a lot of those functionalities in a consistent way and avoid you needing to write too much code to render a lot of those things. So that's why you can see it's calling the initialize function from there and the register on save function, and then you just implement what you need to inside those particular examples. This one's a very basic sample. There is a slightly more advanced sample up there, and all of these come with a markdown file that actually talks you through how to deploy it. I just uploaded the manifest, as you saw, pointing it at their running one. But this does talk you through the full steps to create your own Azure AD app, change the code, and deploy it from that point on. So a really nice sample there. Finally, while we're in our demo, the last thing that we'll show is just briefly the Graph Explorer that we mentioned, that I mentioned before. So when you're getting into the graph, just go to this website. You'll see there's a lot of documentation down here, talks through the authentication in detail, but then also talks through all the different calls that you can do as well, with all the different, the both the beta APIs and actually the production APIs. With the Graph Explorer, you used to have to actually be an administrator in the in Office 365 tenant to perform all of these activities, but now we can actually do it using a demo tenant. So I'm not signed into anything here. Microsoft's actually hooked this up to a full demo environment, so without even having Office 365, I can actually play around with the Graph Explorer and learn how it works. So when it loads up, it will just have your basic V1 command. If you want items about the current user, that's where slash me comes in. And then it enumerates all the different commands that you can actually have off that. The one for finding out what groups a member is in is me slash member of. So that's giving me all the groups that I'm actually a member of, which you can see there's only a couple here. And it will list all the different types of groups as well. So you can see these particular ones are mail groups versus the Microsoft Graph groups. With the ones that are Office 365 groups, I can then click through and get more information about them, and I can then pull out conversations as well. If you just want to find all groups, that's where the groups endpoint comes in, so you can pull that through. That will then list out all the groups, and you can then go into a specific group. You'll get all the properties out of that particular one. And then on that particular, the most common thing that people want to do is, getting the conversations of that, which is just slash conversations. So definitely have a play around with that Graph Explorer. It'll start to show you a lot of the options that you can do. One of the things that I will point out is you might have noticed I could get all the groups that I'm a member of, and with each group, I could then get its conversations. There is no command at the moment to give me all the conversations across all the groups that I've recently seen. So if you want to iterate through and get a whole bunch of conversations from a lot of different groups, that's a number of client-side calls you'll have to do, or you could actually use a server-side SDK to kind of group that up and do a few more requests. All right, we'll flick back to the final few slides. Okay, so we've gone through a lot of different topics here. We've talked about how to govern groups, the options for if you want to turn that off and only allow a specific group of people to be able to create groups. But also with those same settings objects, you saw you can apply things like classification lists, usage guidelines, and other pieces as well that can be very important in an organization. Remembering, however, if we turn off those Office 365 group settings, it does affect all those other applications across the stack, including Power BI, Yammer, and Planner. At the moment, Staff Hub doesn't actually look at the settings for Office 365 groups. It overrides that at the moment. Also, we then talk through the Exchange hybrid configuration, some of the tips and tricks there, just making sure you're on the right CU to be able to get it set up. Equally, making sure you've got a up-to-date Office client if you're in Exchange hybrid as well. And then we jumped into a bunch of the different things you can do coding with groups. Hopefully you could see the Graph API is pretty easy to use. You can jump through and use that a lot. But also connectors, how to connect them up via the webhook and the different messages that you'd use. Finally, we jumped into the new piece and had a look at customizing teams. Now, there is really good documentation on all these pieces as well on the Microsoft site to refer to if you need more information. Finally, obviously make sure you check out some of the other sessions. They'll all be on Channel 9, but please also put in your feedback form. That would be really useful. You can fill that in and give some feedback on it. And I'm actually going to, because it's such a big room, if you guys at the back ask questions, I won't be able to actually hear them. So what I'll do is I'm going to close off the session now, but if you do have questions, I'll be around here and I'm happy to answer them to the side of stage. So thank you very much for your time.